It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. And basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
HaverHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 is the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
No rain tonight. They're happy.
That's right. No rain, but we still have everything else that goes along with Florida.
That's
so,
right.
Plus the threat of a possible hurricane coming at us, too. So that'll be interesting.
It's we're in the cone of uncertainty.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what a cone of uncertainty is, it's when those little things that the dogs wear around their necks so they won't scratch themselves.
That's right. Hold on. It's in here somewhere.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
I had to wake the drummer up.
Yeah. Wow. We don't use
it
often.
No. Every once in a while, I got a psst. There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. So, we're back, and we were off last week. You, our own, you know, Ron was out traveling the world, and or parts of it. And
through the country, parts of that.
having a great old time out there, and so you want to go ahead and give us a little intro on where you went in particular, or as related to our show tonight, I guess it would be.
Actually, I went up to Missouri. I'm originally from the Kansas City area, and I went up to Missouri, a big family get together, big family gathering, and I had an opportunity to go visit a local winery up there. Actually, it's not a winery yet. Yes, it is. He's not officially taking visitors yet. He has been making wine now, and he sells it to local stores and restaurants, but he hasn't opened the winery. It's as a winery, a tasting room or anything. So he's located just outside of Missouri City. I'm not sure if Missouri City is his address, which is located east of Kansas City, which Kansas City, for those of you who don't know, is on the western part of the state of Missouri. Missouri is right smack dab in the middle of the country, pretty much. The center of the country, I think, is somewhere in Kansas. So Missouri is right there. And the winery is located in the eastern part of it, right close to the Missouri bottoms. And the bottoms are actually the area that when the river floods, Missouri River floods, it keeps it very very rich soils there and all that. But he's up a ways from it, and I'll have him tell you about the soils and everything. Sad thing about it is, one thing I have to tell you, this drought that they're having all through the middle part of the country. I saw some corn that was growing in the Missouri bottoms there, and it was really sad. About 3 feet tall, very brown. The ears weren't even a foot long. It was sad. It was really scary too. By this time of the year, I was up there last week, so around August 15th, 16th, that corn should be ready to be picked, but are getting close to it. So it is dry up there. It's very, very dry up there, but it's they're going to make it through it, I hope it. But I talked to Vernon Reed. He's the proprietor and winemaker and just about everything at Wineflower Winery. He's standing by. I'm going to get Vernon on here, and I'll let him tell us all about Wineflower. So, hello, Vernon. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ron. Nice to hear from you.
You know, it's good to see you. I was just telling everybody I met you last week, and you agreed to be on the program tonight, so that's why we're jumping back to Missouri and talking, because Vernon, actually, I walked around with him. We walked through the vineyard. We were in the winery. We spent close to 2 hours, I think it was, there visiting and talking about stuff. Very, very interesting. That's why I asked him to join us tonight, because I wanted to get him on before he forgot about it, before he got busy on other stuff. So,
well, as a matter of fact, we have harvest coming up this Saturday to finish the harvest of our Nortons.
Oh, you finally got the tanks cleared out so you can put the Norton in.
Yes, we're ready, and got the pickers lined up or getting lined up. So we'll begin this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Hopefully we'll be done in 3 days, but that remains to be seen depending on how many pickers actually show up.
Well, is my brother-in-law and sister going to be joining you on this one?
Well, I certainly hope so. I called and left word with them. I have not heard back, but they've been reliable pickers, so I'm expecting them.
Good, good. At Norton looked very good when I was up there last week. These grapes were just beautiful on the beautiful bunches. They were the color they're supposed to be, and you pop one in your mouth, and that sugar level is right there. I was surprised, too, Vernon, that you were telling me how high your residual sugar is when you pick up there.
Well, yes, I generally use 23 bricks as my base, hoping that I'll be there when we start, and by the time we finish, it could be up to 24, 25. However, it really slipped up on us this year. The harvest came much earlier than usual, thanks to a very mild winter, no late frost, good growing season. Got started in March, and with hot summer days, spring days, we've benefited from increased sugar all the way through. So it is of concern, because the higher the sugar levels, the higher the alcohol will be as the sugar is converted into alcohol, and that will take away from the acid. So we'll have to balance those acids to compensate for that increased sugar.
What are you picking? What is the sugar you're picking at Norton at?
Well, it is already at 24, 25 bricks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That, you know, that is high. I mean, the grapes, I popped one in the mouth when we were there walking through the vineyard, you know, a couple of them there, and you can really tell those things are full of sugar.
They're beautiful. They're really beautiful clusters, and an abundant amount of clusters as well.
Yeah, they look great. Let's go back to the beginning here. Tell us, I mentioned that Wineflower Winery is not officially a visitor's place yet. Let us know what you're going to be doing, and tell the listeners what your plans are and all that stuff, if you will, please.
Right. Well, the last piece of property we bought, I've been accumulating property here ever since I got out of the Air Force in 1961.
Wow.
As I think I mentioned to you, I thought I was buying my first 40 acres out in the country, and it was, but then I started seeing some houses being built, and I got a little alarmed. Because I really, truly did not want this to become suburbanized. And so I got into defensive land purchases to prevent further development. But at any rate, what was your question now?
you're telling the background and how'd you get...
Oh, okay. Yeah, so we when I started buying the property, I tried to figure out what to do with it, and I started truck gardening, you know, planting thousands of tomatoes and onions and peppers and so forth, and that was my first hard, cold, cruel lesson in agricultural economics, as I would go down to the farmer's market with my produce and see that they were not too well organized as far as pricing was concerned, and very hotly competitive, and if people didn't have their produce sold by 11 or 11:30, the prices started coming down. I think that things may have changed a little bit now because I've gone to farmers market, and they pretty well stick with their prices. But at any rate, I realized right then I should not be doing that. And I had a great client who's a rancher up in Nebraska, and he told me that I should not plant a crop year after year after year. I should plant one crop and take good care of it. And so that meant to me either grapes or apples or possibly peaches. I settled on grapes, of course. And I'm very happy that I did because it turns out that this topography that we have is just so well suited for grapes for the vineyard. As you can see, we are on these hills. I call them Losel Hills. That's the fine grained soil. That's really the topsoil of Kansas, Nebraska, and Colorado that have been blown over to the east over eons of time and deposited on the glacial till. In what looks like snowdrifts. So we have these undulating hills in South Clay County, and I'm planting on the tops of several of these hills. I've got to about, I haven't counted, but about 10 hills on my property. And so what that means is that I have very well-drained soil, and we get rain in the winter and spring and so forth, and I'm bulletproof for the rest of the year. I get all the moisture that the vines need, and the vines send down their roots to wherever they need to go to get it. And so even when we're putting in a new post or pulling out something, and I dig down a post hole in 2 feet, I'm into moist ground. And so that's another part of the beauty of planting something once rather than year after year, because the roots are there and will grow and keep on developing. The people who grow corn and soybeans and whatever else, you know, they plant it every year and they cut them down, and the roots don't go down to where the moisture is, and consequently they suffer terribly from a drought. But at any rate, I started planting my vines in 1989, and that was on property that I bought to prevent people from building houses on it. And then as it turned out, like I say, it was wonderfully well-suited for the grapes. So I've added over the years, just kept adding. Right now, I would say that if you took all of my vines, all the canopies, and put them end to end, I'd have 5 miles of, actually over 5 miles of canopy. That really is only 8 acres, but with 10-foot spacing.
It sounds impressive when you say 5 miles.
Seems impressive, yeah, that's right. Well, and the truth be told, you know, it's up to me to see, walk the vineyard and see every vine all through the growing season to monitor it. Of course, I don't walk it. I ride the tractor, and I mow and I spray, and so I sometimes I can spray down the middle. I mean, drive down the middle of the aisle and watch both sides. But more often than not, I have to go up one side of the row and then down the other. So I'm really driving 10 miles instead of the 5 miles cover each side.
Oh, you mentioned when I was there, and I was just amazed how deep your soil is there. You were saying that some places.
Yeah, on the I said that these hills are deposited in the soil over the glacial till. Well, at the top there, that's 90 feet thick of the topsoil, and there's no boulders, no rocks, no nothing in there. It's just plain loose soil, and so it it's very good for the vineyard. I could not be happier with that. It was just a lucky accident that things came together in a way that found the grapes being planted in exactly the right soil. And being on the tops of the hills, I've got good air drainage, and I cannot overestimate the importance of that because, you know, in the summertime, we would ordinarily expect to get a lot of condensation on the cool mornings with humid air. And that would create conditions that would be favorable for fungus to grow. Black rot and powdery mildew, all kinds of diseases and blight. And, of course, I have a vigorous spray program to combat that. But with the being on top of the hills, the air tends to want to fall down the hills into cooler cooler valleys, and so that brings in the air down, and so that just that movement, circulation, tends to make any moist condensation on the leaves or fruit to dry out quicker.
How many acres? Well, what do you have planted? Let's talk about that first. What grapes do you have planted there?
I started planting the Vigneault, which is a French-American hybrid. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Vigneault or not, but it's a complex hybridization. 50% of it is Pinot Noir. That's the great red wine grape of Burgundy in France. And the other 50% is a very complex cross-hybridization of Native American grapes, which gives the Pinot winter hardiness to suit Missouri's climate. And in the process, it becomes a white wine rather than a red wine. But it's a very light, delicate, fruity wine, and is just absolutely delicious. And then the balance of my vineyard is the Norton, which is Missouri's answer to Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a full-bodied, rich, lusty red wine, high in tannins, and is an excellent red wine.
Yeah, the for those of you out there too, the Norton is the Cynthiana. Basically, we've talked to wineries in Arkansas, and
right. It was really identified as a good prospective fruit by a doctor in Virginia. It was called the Virginia seedling, and as you know, plants that grow from seeds can become anything because of the gene pool.
Right.
And serious vintner is not going to plant seeds. He's going to make cuttings and create clones. And so this particular doctor was watching how the various Virginia seedlings were doing, and he found one particular vine that he experimented with that was of superior performance than all the others. And so he created the first vineyard of this one cloned vine. His name was Dr. Norton, and so now you know where that name comes from. But as it migrated across the country west, around Kentucky, there was a man who donated a lot of property to a new town being formed there, and so they named his named the town after his two daughters, Cynthia and Anna, and so that's how Cynthiana came into being. The town was named that, and that town lent the name to the Norton vine there. And so that migrated on to Arkansas and Missouri. I really prefer the name Cynthiana because I remember Norton on the Jackie Gleason show being the sewer worker, and so I've got this image of Norton with Jackie Gleason saying, Norton, come us out of that sewer.
Yeah,
but at any rate, it's been adopted here in Missouri as the official state grape and the official state wine, and it's called Norton. Now, I think that I will probably name some of my brands Cynthiana when I make a broader variety of different styles. I've been making, started out making dry red wine out of the Norton, and then I started experimenting with semi-dry and even sweet. I have not tried to blend much with that, except when I accidentally over-oaked one of my vintages, and I was surprised at what a bad effect it was, and so I blend it with no oaked Norton to come out with something just right. But
now,
at any rate, that's...
So you have how many acres of the Vignon and how many of the Norton?
I have 6 acres of Vignon and 2 acres of Norton. And as curious as it may seem, they produce about the same quantity. 2 acres of Norton will produce what 6 acres of Vignon is producing.
That Norton was very prolific while we were walking around. It was just a beautifully full harvest there. You mentioned that you're looking at planting more coming up in the future in different areas. What are you going to be putting in the ground then?
Well, certainly around where people will be, around close to the wine tasting facility and to our new winery and event center, which we plan to build. I will plant Norton because I do not have to spray them. Norton has its own disease resistance, being a variety that's been in existence for centuries. And my Vignot, which is a hybrid, of course, lost any natural resistance to disease that it would have had as a... Pinot Noir, or the other varieties. So I don't want any spraying around my vineyard, so I'll put the Nortons around there. And I'm also going to take advantage of its vigorous growth and change my canopy style. I'm going to adopt the Geneva double curtain because the Norton is so vigorous and produces a lot of foliage as well as a lot of fruit. So I think the double curtain will allow me to... take advantage of its growth habit better.
But now your new tasting room and event center is going to be down a little bit in that lower spot there. So if you're going to put the Norton around that, you're going to start losing that wind from the top of the hill effect that is helping those things. So
well,
with the double
it's
curtain...
It's not that bad because I'm still up... let's see, the rock layer is at about 790, and my top of the hill is about 970. So at 850, which is down off the top of the hill, I'm still well up above the valley, well up the valley. As a matter of fact, the valley is down around 750 foot elevation. So I still have a good 100 feet of fall down to the valley. So I will still have that.
Okay, because I was wondering, because if you're going double canopy on that thing, you're going to make that lot tighter, and you're really going to need that air circulation through it.
Well, and that's why I'm going to be changing my row spacing from 10 feet to probably 12 feet, because I want a 4-foot cross arm instead of a 3-foot or something less, because I really want to have two distinct canopies on the one row of posts. So I'm going to have a wider crossbar and really truly develop two separate canopies on it just for that very reason.
Uh-huh. So then
it'll also allow me to get sunlight in on both sides. I'm orienting, so far I'm orienting all my rows in the north-south direction so that I have that full sun in the morning and the full sun in the afternoon. And then, of course, with leaf pulling, I can get some good sunlight on the clusters and get a good action there.
Yeah, that's I'm just thinking. I could tell the listeners before you came on, I was there and I visited you, so I had an opportunity to see the setup there. You have a great place. You have a lot of potential. I mean, it's really fantastic. I love your idea of your just outside the winery there to the south at your whatever your greenhouse area there. Or,
yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. The pond I drained.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. I'll create a greenhouse in this one of these ravines between the hills that was dammed up, and so I breached the dam by cutting the dirt out of there with our bobcat and drained that lake, that pond, and so yes, I'm going to use that what would have been the basin for a pond as the greenhouse, so that my cover really doesn't have sidewalls. It's just a roof over natural earth forms.
That'd be nice. I'm looking forward to seeing that when you're done with it. I really am. I will be making trips up there to visit family.
Well, absolutely. Since you've got kinfolk up here.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to make a trip there. We talked about the vineyard. Let's go inside to the winery now. What? How many tanks? What are you using? You using oak? Where are you getting the oak? Tell us, you know, let's step inside the winery and talk about all that.
Well, this has grown like Topsy. You know, I first started making wine out of 5-gallon carboils, and the wine crop kept getting bigger and bigger, and so I went to 40-gallon, first to a 6-gallon bucket, and then to a 40-gallon tank, and then to 500 liters, which is 132 gallons, and I got 8 of those tanks. And then I went to the 1,000 liter, which is 264 gallons, and I've got 6 or 8 of those. And then I went to 500 gallon tanks and then 1,000 gallon tanks. So it's grown like Topsy. Now, let's see, I do have a number of oak barrels that I get from Cuba, Missouri. Darn it, I forget. I'll think of the name of the company in just a moment, but they make excellent oak barrels out of the Missouri oak in the Mark Twain forest. And so, as a matter of fact, the barrels coming from there and also from Lebanon, Missouri, from another cooper, those barrels are used all over the world, even in France, where they have the great Nevers Forest and the Argonne Forest that produce their oak. These Missouri oak barrels go down to Australia and New Zealand and California and all over.
Is that World Cooperage?
No, World, I think, is in Lebanon.
Okay.
And this is
okay.
A competitor. I'm embarrassed that I don't have the name at the top of my tip of my tongue. But I'll think of it before we're through.
All right, good. I noticed you had not only oak barrels, but you also, besides stainless steel, you have plastic.
Yes, those, I've used those for a number of purposes, principally for the fermentation of the red wine after a crush and before we press. I'll put it in the big plastic containers with a lid, and I got 6 more of those just yesterday or day before.
Oh, wow. That's where the
Okay. We were so early with this harvest that we did not get last year's vintage bottled like we had planned to, which would relieve, free up some tanks. And so I had to quickly adjust that and get these other containers so I can accommodate our harvest this weekend. But, yeah, so generally that's for the red wine. When they come out of the crusher, they go into there, and I ferment them. And after the fermentation, the normal yeast fermentation brings the Brix level down to about 10. I will introduce the malolactic fermentation process in there.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
Yeah, and then let it run on through. And so, but after about 6 to 7 days, I will press the juice and separate the must, the pomace, and put them in stainless steel.
No.
Or oak. However, I'm going to, frankly, I'm going to transition out of the oak barrels because they are really problematic for me in taking care of. Stainless steel is just so much easier to clean and sanitize and so forth.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And to compensate for the lack of contact in the barrel, I started buying these oak chips and steep the wine like it was a tea bag, only it's a bag of oak chips. And I think I told you the story about the over-oakiness that occurred. I had been used to having the wine on the in the oak barrels for up to a year, 10 months to a year, before taking it out and finishing it off in stainless steel. And so when I decided to try the oak chips, I asked for the for advice from the people who sold that to me. And so they told me that 20-pound bags in this stainless steel tank that I had would just be about right. And I didn't have enough sense to ask him for how long, and I just assumed that that was going to be the 10 months or 10 to 12 months. And boy, was that ever a mistake. It occurred to me to start, I thought after about five or six months, I better start taste testing it. And my first taste test, it was horrible. Just so strong in the oakiness that I thought I'd ruined it. But what I did, and then I found out later when I called and asked about it, oh, no, you should, 2 or 3 weeks maybe, you should taste it regularly until you feel like it's done. Well, I wish they'd told me that to begin with.
Not 5 months.
But it turned out all right because the next year I blended this over-oaked wine with no-oak wine. And I found out that the blending ratio was 75% for no oak and 25% for the over oak, and it turned out to be just right.
Yeah, that's funny. That most of the time when you do use oak logs or chips or stuff like that, the oak time really does cut down because you got a lot larger areas being in contact with it, but that's funny.
Well, I was naive, didn't know what I was doing.
Where do you sell your wines? Your tasting room obviously isn't open yet. I mentioned that. Where do
you
sell?
Yeah, that's right. We have our wines in some restaurants and in some of the grocery stores and some of the liquor stores in the Liberty area, Liberty Excelsior Springs area.
Oh, so
I noticed on your website you were referring to us as being in Missouri City. We are near Missouri City, But we are neither in Liberty nor Missouri City. We're in the county out in the unincorporated area, Clay County.
Oh, okay.
But Missouri City is a nice little town of about 300 people, and we're about a mile from there. And Liberty is a nice bigger town of about 30,000 people. So we identify ourselves more prominently with Liberty.
Of course. Yeah, Missouri City is so small, nobody knows where it is. At least Liberty people can relate to the fact that that was the first daylight holdup of a bank by Jesse James. So
yeah, in Liberty, yeah. That's right. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you mentioned I have another job. I am an architect. I don't know if you'd mentioned that or not.
No, I haven't mentioned that. Yeah,
and in one of my previous projects, I was responsible for renovating the, restoring and renovating, not renovation, restoring the Jesse James home cabin,
who oh, really?
Was
yeah.
Born up in Kearney, Missouri, which is about 10 miles from here
yeah,
to the north.
Yeah, you don't mind,
that was a, that was a neat experience working on Jesse James' home.
There's a lot of history in that area there that people don't realize. I mean, because of this home.
Well, yeah, the Missouri-Kansas fights in football and basketball, they go way back to the border wars
after
the Civil War, based upon William Quantrill's raid on Leavenworth, which
right.
was in retaliation for the Jayhawkers' raid in Missouri and so forth. So that goes back to the Civil War.
Yeah, and the rivalry is still there. And
most
Missourians don't have much to do with Kansans, and most Kansans don't have much to do with Missourians. Yeah.
Well, that's an over-exaggeration, but it's a fun kind of thing, fun kind of rivalry. But I'll have to admit to you that some of my best friends are Kansans.
Well, I grew up in North Kansas City there, so that's.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
North Kansas City?
Yes, I went.
What high school did you go to?
North Kansas City High School.
Oh.
Yeah.
I used to debate North Kansas City High School debate tournaments when I was in high school.
Yeah. Where did you go to high school?
Down in Monette, South Missouri.
Oh, yeah, I knew it.
And I started running into this same debate team from North Kansas City. Met them at my first tournament as a freshman, and I met them at tournaments all over the area of the Midwest all the way to my senior year. And then I went to school at the University of Arkansas and actually created the debate team down there.
Hmm.
And the first tournament I went to in Louisiana was William Jewell College, and it featured those same North Kansas City High School debaters I met down in Louisiana.
Oh, that's amazing.
We had great fun.
Well, when you grow up in an area, most of the time you just stay there. I mean, that's that's all. Yeah, I went to North Kansas City High School. I had a chance when I was home that last week, had a chance to walk the halls of the high school. I hadn't been in there in years. Yeah.
Well, there's a new high school in North Kansas City School District, and that's Oak Park High School.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but I helped to design that back in the 60s.
Did you? Oak Park opened in my junior year.
Really?
And, yeah, they opened up in my junior year. And
I
was dating a girl,
and she
went to Oak Park, and I went to Northtown. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you can tell her that I helped to design that.
You helped design that school, huh?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a unique design to that. Everybody was quite impressed with the design.
Oh, yeah. I was very pleased.
Yeah. Let's back up. When do you get bud break? And well, obviously you're harvesting now, but you said it's a little bit early. But when do you get bud break up there usually?
Oh, late. Late April, generally. Our theoretical last frost is April 10th, so we don't like to see buds swelling in late March or early April, just to get past that threat of frost. But here this year we had bud burst in March.
Wow.
Yeah. So. most unusual, and we were fortunate not to have any frost protection, though no frost, I mean. But there were several vineyards in Missouri that did have that late frost, and we were spared that.
Well, you can almost count on it. Believe me, growing up there, you can almost count on a late frost hitting you. I mean, it would really be scary to start seeing bud break in March.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was really keeping my fingers crossed, and we sneaked right through it.
Yeah. But, and then harvest is normally a little bit later than this, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. We normally harvest the vigno the last 2 weeks of August, and the Norton the last 2 weeks of September. They're about a full month behind.
Wow.
But here we are still in the last 2 weeks of August, and we finished our vigneault 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and the Norton is being picked now. That's a whole,
yeah,
whole
that's
month
right.
on
yeah.
average sooner. Wow. Yeah. So this drought.
And frankly, they should have been picked a week or two ago.
Yeah.
And I had to stall because I didn't have the tankage.
Yeah, I know. That's one thing. We were there talking about it, and every tank you had was full. I mean, it's just there's no room for anything.
Yeah.
So you got room for all that Norton?
We're going to have to find room. Well, frankly, we need to bottle, and we're getting geared up to do that just after the harvest so that we can start freeing up those tanks.
What do you use for bottling? I didn't see your bottling machine.
Oh, well, we have a regular 6-spout filler.
Oh.
And then we have a nice new corking machine that injects nitrogen into the bottle just before the cork goes in.
Wow.
And I've converted to synthetic corks because the real corks are subject to problems. At least maybe I wasn't buying the highest quality cork or something. At any rate, I lost confidence in the real corks.
Really?
And,
wow.
And many wineries are going to the screw metal screw caps just for the same reason that the cork is so easily tainted with all kinds of problems that impart off odors and tastes and so forth to the wine. And so I think the ceremony of corkscrew and opening the cork is so important to the presentation of the wine and the ceremony of drinking wine that I needed to stay with that. And so that's why I'm using synthetic corks rather than screw caps.
Are you using just the regular full synthetic or rubber or plastic?
Yeah, it is a synthetic, and I'm not exactly sure if it's composition. I think I've seen some sort of initials that describe what it is.
Yeah.
But whether it's polypropylene or I don't know, vinyl. It's not rubber, and it's something else, you know.
Is that corking machine present? Your corking machine has no problems in using it then and corking it?
Oh, no. It's a sweet machine.
Yeah, okay.
It applies a nice uniform pressure. And before, those hand corkers, you know, the plunger is not the same size as the cork, and you can kind of indent in the cork and kind of tear up the cork a little bit, and that was part of my problem. And of course, this new machine that I've got now is an automatic machine, and it does a wonderful job.
That's why I don't use synthetic at all, because I'm using hand corking, and I tried synthetic, and it was just almost impossible to do it with a hand corker. I mean, really, almost totally impossible. Yeah, because the synthetics that I had, just you press down into it, and it wouldn't press it into the bottle. It would just
go halfway and stuff like that. It was.
Oh, I see. Well, I think maybe being fortuitous in getting this particular corker was maybe a happy accident, because it has a full uniform pressure over the cork surface and just does a nice job of putting it in.
Yeah, that's what you need when you're doing that. And that's really what you need. You say you ship around to local stores and all that stuff, but you distribute yourself? Or you do you have a distributor?
Yes, I'm doing it myself. And that's I'm hoping to be really an interim thing, because I really want to sell all our wine at retail price rather than discounted wholesale price. But at any rate, since we are not open yet, that's the best way to get our product out into the market.
So you drive it around yourself?
Yes, either me or somebody here that works for me.
Wow. That's a lot of work there, too, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Frankly, since I'm dealing with local businesses, I am kind of welcomed as a homegrown winery. There's a sense of loyalty and a sense of hooray for liberty and liberty producers and so forth. So having this personal contact with the managers of the different wine and spirits departments is good. You know, they promote our product, and it's working out fine.
Well, that's good. That's real good. What does that come in any conflict with the Missouri state laws on your distribution or anything?
No.
I mean, so many different states have so many different strange laws. I just wondered if that was any problem.
Well, I'll have to be frank to admit to you that I just have never heard of it being a problem. I don't know why I can't. You know, I fill out my monthly reports, and it shows, you know, I show them my invoice.
Right, yeah. So, you know, if there was a problem, I'm sure they would
need to have a check and balance on the sales tax. So I'm sure that this is all perfectly legal.
Yeah, if it weren't, I'm sure the state would let you know immediately.
Yes, they would.
Without question. So when are you looking at having your official tasting room open?
Well, of course, I had wanted to have it before now, but I've got a lot of family help, and as you might guess, in a family, there are different points of view, and while I'm used to giving directions and directing everybody, that doesn't work with your family.
You're right.
And so I'm dealing with family members who have placed a higher priority in landscaping the place, developing trees and shrubs and flowers. My son has planted thousands upon thousands of bulbs and flowers and so forth. He's actually planted, I would hazard to guess, at least 80,000 flowers planted.
Wow.
Yeah. Most of those are bulbs. Frankly, when they come up in all their glory, it's a great flash of color. My preference is for a more permanent color, blossoms that thrive longer in the summer than a lot of those that we have. But at any rate, it's all to the good, and I'm not denigrating his work at all. He's added a lot of beauty and charm to the place.
So there's no real set date yet on the.
No, I'm saying this fall.
Oh.
This fall, yeah. Now that the planting season is over, and we're still in the watering business because of the drought, but that'll be coming to a close, and then we're going to devote full attention to restoring this house. The house is on the last 5 acres I acquired It was just a fortuitous thing that when this came onto the market, I was able to get it immediately, and that will allow us to have an interim facility out of an existing house. Building some gardens and pavilions and pergolas and so forth for the outdoors, for outdoor events. But we do have the capacity. We will have the capacity to seat 50 inside.
Wow. Well, you need to have signs leading up to the place, though, both from the north and from the bottoms over there to the south.
Yes, that's right. And we'll face that issue when we have to.
Yeah, because it's even my brother-in-law, who had been there a few times, still had problems finding it.
Well, that was because the two bridges on the main road from Liberty were out. Not one bridge, two bridges.
Two bridges. Are those fixed yet?
Yeah. They were just out for about a month. And it just happened to cover the time when we were harvesting the vignette. But they're done. They wanted to get them back open by the time school started, and school has already started. And so we've got traffic out here, and it's easy to get here now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because we were coming in from the south to the bottoms there and all that, and he's going, it's one of these streets. I'm not sure which one. And so he was slowing down, looking at every one, and then he finally noticed it. So, yeah, well, if it's easier from the north, then that's would be the way to come into it, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, I'll tell you what, Vernon, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about wine flower. Mike, do you have anything you'd like to ask Vernon here?
No, this is very interesting, and just wishing the best of luck with this, and, you know, many many happy days ahead of you with this.
Well, thank you. It's very exciting. Great. I'm just extremely pleased with the great good fortune we had to luck into this property, it couldn't have been better terrain, and as a location. One thing I did not mention is that of all the wineries in Missouri, our winery and vineyard is the closest in to a metropolitan area of any winery in Missouri.
Is it? Really? Wow.
We, as a crow flies, from where I am standing right now in this little farmhouse, we're 14 miles to 10th and Main in downtown Kansas City.
That's all it is?
14 miles, yes.
I could have sworn it would be further. I really
on the road, yeah, you drive it, and it'll be maybe 20 miles. But just geographically, I say that because that shows you how close we are to the center of a large metropolitan area. Over on the other side of the state, the long established wineries related more to the St. Louis market. Well, they're 40, 50, 60, 80 miles from St. Louis.
They are.
None of them are as close as we are to Kansas City as they are to St. Louis. So I consider that a real advantage because it would be a nice, easy drive from the city. Even Overland Park, Leawood, the areas south and west of the downtown area. It's an easy drive, and it will be something that will be a pleasant experience for everybody to come out and spend an evening or afternoon. And
you might even get some of those Kansans over there, too. You know?
That's right. That's why I say that some of my best friends are Kansans. They're good people.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
I have a lot of clients in Kansas for my architectural practice.
My daughter-in-law is from Kansas, so I can't complain too much.
Yep.
Well, do you have a website yet for the winery?
We do. Yeah, it's wineflower.com, and it's I've made the strategic mistake of having something out there and just kind of ignoring it. Well, you haven't been doing the things that we're supposed to do, and one of my sons is going to take that over and bring that up to date and make changes and keep it current and do all the things that you should have when you have a website. But right now, it's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
All right, very good. Well, I next time I'm up there, I'd like to come down and make a visit with you again, and maybe
absolutely, you check up on us.
And then we'll get you on the air sometime. Let you you can tell the listeners your progress and how things are going, all that sometime in the future too.
Okay, I'll be happy to. It's been an enjoyable time we've spent here together.
Well, thank you very much for your time too, Vernon, and have yourself a wonderful evening. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
All right, thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Woohoo.
All right.
Okay. There we go.
Good conversation.
Very good discussion.
Nice guy. I went up there and I met him. He older guy, obviously. Is an older guy, but full of vim and vigor, and very knowledgeable. Knowledgeable about what he's doing out there in the vineyard and what he's doing in the fermentations and all that stuff. I had a chance to taste his Vignoy and his Norton, and the he had one of each. My brother-in-law had, and so I had a chance to taste the Vignoy first, and the Vignoy is—he made it sweet, but it's not real sweet. It really has a nice flavors, a nice taste to it. It had some the floweriness to it that was, good floral aromas and stuff like that. I wasn't getting, a lot of Vignoys when you get them out of Germany and stuff like that are the style that compared to Germany, where you get a lot of peachy and stuff. I wasn't. It was more of honeysuckles and stuff like that, and the aromas and stuff. But very nice wine, not real, real sweet. I also had a chance to taste his Norton, the one that he told us about that he blended, because his first batch was too oaked. And to me, it was a little bit sweet. I like a Norton. I really am a big fan of the Norton or Santana. Not because I'm from Missouri, simply because I just find it a very versatile grape and a very interesting grape. And I've had dry ones, I've had sweet ones, I've had medium and all that. And he tend to make his in a little bit sweeter style. And I don't know, Norton to me, I prefer to have a little bit drier. But it was pleasant. It was a little bit light, but that's probably because he blended it. I mean, he was doing that blending on there, so a little bit lighter body. But it's nice. He's got himself a good thing going there. He's got himself some good areas there, good land. Just really a very hilly area there. I was amazed.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that since you've been there. We're talking hills. A hill in Florida is 32 feet, but
Central. Go to Central Florida. Even over in Dade City and San Antonio for you bike riders out there. That's San Antonio, Florida. Here, it's a very small town for anyone listening across country. It's got some hills, rolling hills on it. Still bigger than that. A little bit bigger than that. He's. I don't know. I very tight too. I mean, it's not like a big area. I mean, just in the area he was at, we were driving down on the river bottoms, coming in, approaching from the south, and we're going up the hills and to his driveway, and long uphill driveway to the vineyard, and then we walked up a hill again to the vineyards, and so it really a lot of hills there. And he, you heard him. He contributed that to the fact that over the eons, the soil blowing out of Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, and all that, forming it right there. And I think part of that too is probably from the Missouri River flooding over the centuries too, and flattening out around there and that other area there. But it's hilly. It's hard to. He was talking about 850 to 950 feet. Top of the one hill, 950 feet, and then down at the very lowest part of his property view, as he said, about 750, 780. So it's a difference of about 200 feet from the low property up to the top property. So that's a substantial climb there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got
He's got a couple of ponds there. He's got one area, low area, that he's going to be building the winery on, which is really a nice area. I mean, his plans are to put vineyards all around the higher area around this. So he has vineyards all around it. Then a gazebo and a pavilion and all sorts of stuff on the lower end of it. Really nice. Next time I'm up there, I'm going to gonna have to take pictures. I'll put it on the All About Wine 101 Facebook page and post it on there. I'll have my brother-in-law take some and send them to me, and I'll get them posted up there because it's a nice area, nice piece of property he's got there. And he's real proud of it because he mentioned it quite a bit in this interview, and he also mentioned it quite a bit when I was there. He's really proud of his property. So, but nice guy. Very cool. And a lot of future there. It's great. I don't know, and I'm going to mention too, I don't know if he's married or if he's still married or if his wife has passed away or what's going on. He never mentioned his wife. He mentioned his son and stuff, but he's never mentioned his wife. So I don't know what if she's helping him or if he even has a wife or that. So.
But okay. Oh.
Good interview. Good old Missouri boy in there, and a good interview. So that's.
Yep, definitely. Okay. Did you have any other topics besides the wine fest this weekend, or
I have a little thing here. I want to grapes of Missouri. Since we jumped back and caught Missouri here, let me quickly run through the grapes of Missouri. We were going through Vernon's vineyard there, and he had this one odd-shaped leaf and this strange plant there mixed in with his Norton. And I go, what's this? And he says, I'm not sure if it's a Concord or if it's a Catawba. And I taste it, and I've tasted Catawbas on the vine before, and it was a Catawba. And I said, why do you have a Catawba grape in the middle of your Norton vineyard? He says, well, the local University Extension Center had some grapes, and so he took it and planted it in the ground. And that was that was it. So he said he's got three Catawba plants mixed in with his Norton growing there. But it's a pink used make a pink grape. Actually, it was starting to turn. It was still green, starting to turn. It wasn't near ready to be harvested like the Norton was. But the Catawba is classic New York grape, really. If any of you, we talked to New York wineries and Catawba, just about everybody up there grows Catawba. Chambourcin is also made in Missouri, a lighter bodied one. Concord is used. It's gives you a very, very grape taste. And the Norton or Cynthiana, we talked about that. And the St. Vincent, this is a hybrid, is one of Missouri's very versatile grapes. Used in a burgundy style a lot. It's they tend to make it slightly sweeter than you find in classic burgundies, but that Beaujolais Nouveau or Burgundy Nouveau style, just a lighter style. That's about it for red wines in Missouri of any importance. Then you got the white wines, the Cayuga, which is hybrid. Grape is usually used for blending. The Chardonnay, which is a cross of the Chardonnay and the Sauvignon grape, Chardonnay. It's got some of the characteristics of a Chardonnay, which is nice because Chardonnays don't grow well in Missouri. Sauvignon, white grape, semi-dry, usually what they make in very good with pork and I don't know, Asian food, stuff like that, really. Traminette, it's a baby of a Gewürztraminer, one of its parent grapes is the Gewürztraminer. And so it's a lot like, a lot of characteristics of the Gewürz. Vidal Blanc is a semi-dry, Italian dry type wine. Vignon, which we talked about, is Missouri's white grape, basically. You can find that all over in Missouri. And then the Vivant, which is a few wineries around Missouri growing that. It's getting more and more popular. It's flavors of mango, a melon type thing. Interesting grape. Missouri grapes our Missouri wineries are exploding. It's amazing what they're doing there on Missouri wineries. They're all over. They got trails and, you know, four or five trails around Missouri now and all that stuff. It's amazing. Every time I go up there and visit, there's always stuff that they're talking about Missouri wineries and stuff, and you see it just about everywhere, and they're promoting it a lot, and there's stuff in the papers and stuff. So it's like many states, it is exploding there. So I wanted to cover the grapes.
It's a good thing.
Jumped back and went to Missouri today. I just wanted to talk about that for a second too. So
not a problem. For anybody else out there who's is in a winery that we've already, you know, the state that we've already covered, we always say, you know, it doesn't matter if we're on Rhode Island or whatever comes after Rhode Island. QRSTS would
South
be
Carolina.
There you go. if we're past your state and you want to be a guest, you know, just like we did tonight with Missouri, by all means, you know, contact us, contact the show. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. It would be a great address to email if you're interested in being on the program, and it doesn't matter if we've passed your state. We'll still bring you on. So come on and be on the program with us at All About Wine, and love to have you, regardless of alphabetical order and all that kind of stuff. And European, wouldn't that be cool?
Yes,
as long as you can speak. English European. In some form, that'd be great. Yes.
We have a winery in Australia we can interview. We need to contact her and set up an interview sometime for her and get her on. That would be fun, too.
Yeah, that'd be great. Our first real international guest. So that would be cool. And maybe we'll have to revisit some of those wineries if we can, you know, get some guests on there. So some of those European and beyond countries. So, yeah, that would be great.
That would be fun. That would be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you have, I read in your newsletter that you have Wine Fest this Saturday, August 25th. The only question I have on there is on the sidebar, it says 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and on the description, it says 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
11 to 4.
11. Okay. No problem.
I don't know why I said 1.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I go, change? Maybe it's a special thing or something.
The key stuck.
Mm-hmm. Ah, the key, of course. Okay. Well, anyway, the announcement thing says 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. I just want to make sure before I read
that's
that. So, it is 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And so we'll be back in – it's just the dance version of it. Let's see. Is it the tropical version? Let me try this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's all right.
We'll be back
everybody
in 1 minute.
Everybody dance.
We'll be back
and
in,
listen.
That's right. Yes. Sounds oddly enough like our out song thing, outro.
Yeah.
So we'll be back in 1 minute on All About Wine. Stay tuned.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Wine Fest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at Wine Fest.
There you go.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And if you weren't dancing with pineapples balanced on your head, then that song was not right. So but that's just what it's like. That I don't know what was that character on the commercials or something. They look anyway, some kind of tropical thing. That's this Saturday, August 25th, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery, and it's going to be a great time. And should be good to go. So definitely
you know, head down there or head up there, wherever you may be right now.
Well, that's right. You know, it's great. That's true.
Yep.
And we yes. can't pass without mentioning the fact that a couple of things. Number one, if you're coming to the Tampa area for the Republican National Convention, come out to the winery.
That's right.
You know,
probably one of the few places in this area that you're not going to have roadblocks, security that's, checkpoints. And,
that's true. That's true. So come out. It's yep. going to be a lot easier. Instead of battling downtown, right. drive north a short drive to the lovely setting yep. of the country and visit
that's right.
the winery.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic and a great way to get away from all of that because I was watching on the news earlier, and they were talking about how employees at all the buildings downtown, they can't use the street entrance. They're either going to have to use a back separate entrance where they're going to be screened and all that kind of stuff, or they're just not going to show up for work. They're talking about, you know, 60% of tenants down there are just, you know, forget it. We'll, you know, have a nice vacation. Kind of
yeah,
thing. Don't want to deal
really.
With that.
Oh, it's going to be. We might have to be battling Isaac at the same time.
Yeah.
So, boy.
That'd be interesting.
It's
going to be an interesting week.
Yeah, Tampa is not a good place to be this week.
No. So definitely venture north on I-75, not too far, and take that exit 285 off of
right.
I-75. Easy to get on and off the interstate there, no traffic, and it's going to be perfect. So you can come down there anytime. So
that's right.
It'll be great. Get away from there and enjoy some wine and the hospitality and everything.
There you go.
Fantastic.
There you go.
So let's see. What do we have here? I guess
that's
next week.
Next week. Next week, I'll tell you what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to get a hold of Cooperage, a barrel place.
Okay.
This week. If I can get a hold of a Cooperage to come on and join us next Thursday evening, I'm going to try to do that. I don't know. I'll make some phone calls. I'll look on the internet and see if I can't find numbers. And I'll try to get a Cooperage on. And we'll talk about barrel making, which should be
fine. All right. That'll be good. That'll be August the 30th and next
August
Thursday.
August the 30th,
and
yeah.
Stay tuned to the Facebook page in case there are any updates to that, because next week, weather-wise, depending on what Isaac is going to do, it'll be an interesting week. What are they talking
yes.
about? Sunday, Monday? Yeah, we should be cleared by Thursday, but you never know with these stupid
should
things.
Be, yeah.
Yeah.
We're still in that cone.
Anyway. So. Yes. So stay tuned to the Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/ allaboutwinebtr, allaboutwinebtr on Facebook, no spaces or dashes or anything. And, stay tuned for that. I know you posted, you know, tonight's guest information well enough in advance. And, you know, that's the best way to keep in touch with the show. And if you have comments or questions or anything for a future show, or you just, you know, want to know something about the program or wine in general, preferably about the program, email the show at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And I guess we'll close out the show right now, and we'll see you all next Thursday on August the 30th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah. Good night. Have a great week, and we'll see you all next time. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Thank you.
Bye.
And we got to do the dance thing again.
Oh,
here we go.
Everybody dance.
Yep.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75,
take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.